Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998, A Closer Look at the Enemy.
Hello. You know, this world we live in is a complicated place. Behind every phenomenon we observe, there are many forces at work, some of them obvious and some not so obvious. Trying to separate what's important from what's not important can be a confusing task. Every week when we discuss on this program what's happening in the world around us, and I try to explain events so that listeners can have a clear understanding of them, I must simplify the world. Clarity requires simplification. Understanding demands simplification. A useful explanation requires separating the important things from those which are less important and focusing first on the former. If I tried to explain every phenomenon in the world in complete detail, leaving out nothing, I would succeed only in confusing everyone, especially myself. So if we want to understand the world, we must simplify it. But we must be careful not to oversimplify, or our explanations lose their value. Occasionally, my listeners accuse me of oversimplifying, or they are aware of some factor which I have not discussed in detail, and they suspect that I have left it out deliberately because it would contradict some theory of mine. Here's an old example of the way oversimplification can lead to confusion. After the Bolshevik takeover of Russia early in this century, many anti-communists in America spread the word that a majority of the Bolshevik leaders were not Russians, but were Jews, and they warned Americans that there also were many Jewish communists in America who posed a danger of subversion. This was back in the days before the exposure of the Rosenbergs and other communist Jewish spies and conspirators in America. The Jewish media countered this warning with a deliberate campaign of confusion. They said, "Oh, you used to accuse us of being international bankers and capitalists and of subverting nations with our money. Now you accuse us of being international communists and of being a threat to capitalism. So, which is it? Are we capitalists or are we communists? It can't be both, so make up your mind." This response was supposed to make their accusers look foolish, and with much of the public the trick worked. Of course, the truth of the matter is that Jews are both capitalists and communists and neither. They are first and last Jews, and that really says it all, if one understands what a Jew is. The average Gentile thinks that a communist must be someone who is a believer in communist ideology, and a capitalist must be someone who is a believer in the ideology of free enterprise. It doesn't occur to him that for many Jews, ideology is not something that one actually believes. It is simply a tool which one uses for deceiving non-Jews. The aim always is to acquire wealth and power, and whether one uses capitalist methods and ideology or communist methods and ideology for this purpose depends upon the situation. Regardless of the methods one uses, one remains a Jew. That's what is important. And of course, most of the people who were trying to warn their fellow Americans about the dangers represented by the Jews in their midst didn't try to explain that, because most Americans simply wouldn't have understood. It would have been too complicated for them. So the anti-communists simply said, "Watch out, the Jews are communists or are sympathetic to the communists." And that was an oversimplification of the truth. Here's a more recent example. I have warned Americans that Bill Clinton is a puppet of the Jews, an obedient tool of the Jews, and I have pointed out the fact that most of the important appointments he has made as president have gone to Jews. Two Supreme Court justices, his entire foreign policy and national security team, and so on. And I have stated that the Jewish media got him elected in 1992 and then re-elected in 1996. And so now some people have asked me, well, if Clinton is an obedient tool of the Jews, why are they now trying to destroy him? Why are some of the people who are in the forefront of those now pulling Clinton down Jews? Why would a Jewess, Monica Lewinsky, turn on him? Don't you know that some of Ken Starr's associates are Jews? Didn't you notice that one of Clinton's most important attackers is Connecticut's Jewish Senator Joseph Lieberman? It has been the Jewish media like the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post which have exposed Clinton's lies and other crimes. So how can you say that he is a puppet of the Jews? It doesn't make sense. But of course, it does make sense if one doesn't try to oversimplify. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I've already covered much of the ground in earlier broadcasts. But I'll try to add a few more details so that the picture is still simple, still clear, but not overly simple. The basic facts are these. First, the Jews control the mass media, or more accurately, they are the most powerful of the conscious elites in the media world. They wield more control over the media than any other coherent and self-conscious group. And because of this media control, they are able to exercise a determining influence on the electoral process. In other words, through their media control, they are able to control the politics of a mass democracy where everyone, even the most easily manipulated elements of the population, has an equal vote. Second, Bill Clinton is a talented but utterly corrupt man. He is a typical child of the 1960s. He grew up believing that the world owed him something. He grew up believing that he was entitled to whatever he could grab. And he grew up cynical. He grew up during a period when the Jews were turning American society on its head, when Jews were breaking all of the rules and getting away with it. Bill Clinton noticed this and learned from it. And Bill Clinton grew up with a talent for manipulating people, a talent for lying to people and getting them to believe him. This suited him perfectly for a career in politics. And the Jews noticed Bill Clinton. They saw him as potentially very useful to them. He is exactly the sort of man they always are on the lookout for. Corrupt, but charming. Someone who can attract votes, but who understands which side his bread is buttered on. They supported him with their media and with their money. Without their support, he wouldn't have gotten into the White House. And Bill Clinton reciprocated. He gave them whatever they wanted. He appointed them to every high position in the government, and he pushed their policies and programs. On all of this, the record is clear. So why are they abandoning, even attacking, their good friend Bill Clinton now? Well, of course, he never really was their friend. He was their useful tool, and he has become a badly damaged tool as a consequence of his own personal weaknesses. The Jews didn't set out to destroy him. He did that himself. Remember, Ken Starr was ready to throw in the towel and give up on investigating Clinton more than a year ago. If anyone besides Clinton deserves credit for his downfall, it is Paula Jones. When Paula Jones sued Clinton for sexual harassment, she opened the Pandora's box from which the affair with Monica Lewinsky eventually came to light. Remember, the Jewish media tried hard not to notice Paula Jones, but Paula eventually was noticed by the public, resulted from several factors beyond the control of the Jewish media bosses. And that's one of those little complications we must deal with in the real world. Despite all of their media power and all their money, the Jews are not able to control everything all the time. Sometimes The Jews are compelled by circumstances just like the rest of us. They also have their vulnerabilities. Paula Jones opened a Pandora's box that the Jews would have preferred to keep closed. But once the box was open, they had to decide what to do about Clinton. On the one hand, they have Al Gore waiting in the wings, and Al Gore is just as corrupt as Bill Clinton, just as willing a tool. But on the other hand, Gore simply doesn't have Clinton's talents. He'll do what the Jews tell him, but he won't be able to charm the voters as effectively as Clinton could. They'd like to keep Clinton, but he's become a bit of a tar baby. And so we have had an opportunity to see another of the world's little complications. And that is that not even the Jews are always in complete agreement about the best way to proceed. The Jews don't want to become too closely identified with Clinton's corrupt image. Looking a little further ahead than the mass of Gentile voters who still think Clinton should stay in the White House, the Jews understand that it will not be helpful for them to have a very close historical association with the Clinton administration. They don't want Clinton to be thought of as their man, because they have a suspicion that despite his present popularity, his historical image will be very bad indeed. For some of them, that is the primary consideration, and they'd like to see Clinton go quickly and then muddle through with Al Gore as best they can. Other Jews are still fascinated by Clinton's approval ratings and by his ability to charm the Lennings. They don't want to trade him in for Al Gore, no matter how much tar rubs off on them. And of course, they also have the consideration that if they all abandon him simultaneously and all begin attacking him, he conceivably could turn on them and lash out at them. Better to keep him mindful that despite the fact that some of them are pulling him down, if he wants to stay out of prison, he had better keep obeying orders. So, there are complications in life even for the Jews. I'll give you one more example of the subtleties that one must deal with in trying to understand the role of the Jews in our society. Last week, one of the most powerful Jewish organizations, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, the ADL, had a huge press conference at the National Press Club in Washington and simultaneous press conferences in a number of cities around the country. And they announced that I am the most dangerous man in America. Really, I am the most dangerous man in America. And the organization I head, the National Alliance, is the most dangerous organization in America. Really, not the mafia, not what's left of the Communist Party, not some violent and well-armed militia group, not Louis Farrakhan and the black Muslims, but the National Alliance. Well, I long ago decided that any insult from the devil is a compliment. But still there are some troubling aspects to what the Anti-Defamation League has done. And I'll share them with you because they can help us understand better the way the Jews operate. When the ADL held its press conferences last week, it handed out press releases to the reporters and politicians. The press release began with a statement by the top ADL commissar, Abraham Foxman, saying, quote, "The National Alliance is an alliance of bigots and bombers thriving on hate," end of quote. And then it listed a long series of violent crimes and terrorist acts the ADL claims are, quote, "linked to the National Alliance and its propaganda," end of quote. The list begins, 1992 to 1995, Midwest. Authorities say the Aryan Republican Army, a white supremacist gang that required members to read the Turner Diaries, committed 22 bank robberies and bombings. April 19, 1995, Oklahoma City. The bombing of the Murrah Federal Building is eerily reminiscent of a fictional bombing scene in the Turner Diaries, of which Timothy McVeigh was a devotee. December 1995, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Two soldiers stationed at Fort Bragg who were avowed neo-Nazis and reportedly read National Alliance propaganda murdered an African-American couple, etc. There's a lot more to the ADL's press release, but you get the idea. I and the other members of the National Alliance are bomb throwers and bank robbers linked to 22 bank robberies and bombings in the Midwest, to the Oklahoma City bombing, to the shooting of a black drug dealer and his girlfriend in North Carolina, and to lots of other things. Now, as a matter of fact, neither I nor anyone else in the National Alliance had ever heard of the Aryan Republican Army and its 22 bank robberies and bombings, or of Timothy McVeigh, or of the soldiers at Fort Bragg who shot the black drug dealer, until we saw these people on television news programs like everyone else. But we are linked to them, says the ADL. How? Did some of these folks listen to one of my American Distant Voices broadcasts? Probably. At least, I wouldn't be surprised. Did some of them read my 1978 novel, The Turner Diaries? Probably. At least, I've seen evidence to indicate that Timothy McVeigh did, although I don't know about any of the others. There are 250,000 copies of the book in circulation, and probably 500,000 readers altogether, including, no doubt, Abraham Foxman and a number of his associates in the ADL. So, that's how I and the National Alliance are linked to bombings, bank robberies, and murders. Very clever. So then it's fair to say that the Catholic Church is linked to mafia operations, and that the Automobile Association of America, the AAA, is linked to drunk driving, and that the folks who publish various editions of the Bible are linked to the crimes committed by people who quote the Bible as they take an axe to their wives or blow away a neighbor with a shotgun. Quote, "The National Alliance is an alliance of bombers and bigots," close quote, says Abraham Foxman. I am not aware of a single instance of a bombing committed by a National Alliance member, although a couple of years ago, a former member in Florida had a pipe bomb he was trying to build blow up in his face. He wasn't a member of the National Alliance at the time, and he didn't actually bomb anything except himself. But that's enough for Abraham Foxman and the ADL to describe the National Alliance as an organization of bombers and bigots. You know, every organization which recruits from the public will occasionally recruit a member who has had or will have a problem with the law. But here's something to remember. The Democratic Party has a much higher percentage of lawbreakers among its members than does the National Alliance. We don't tolerate criminal activity, but the head of the Democratic Party seems to thrive on it, or at least he did before Ken Starr got on his case. Abe Foxman and the ADL seem to thrive on criminal activity, too. 5 years ago, in April 1993, search warrants were executed on the Los Angeles and San Francisco offices of the ADL, and police seized hundreds of confidential police files which had been stolen by the ADL. Some of these police files were from investigations of anti-apartheid groups in the United States, and the ADL had given copies to the South African government in return for access to confidential South African police files on anti-Israel groups in South Africa. A lot of the people whose names were in those confidential police files the ADL had stolen sued the ADL for invasion of privacy, and that's still working its way through the courts. But here's the really interesting part of all this. Newspapers and other media took the ADL's press release last week as gospel, and they printed big excerpts from it. It's been in newspapers all over the country. You've probably seen some of these stories yourself. With one exception, none of these newspapers even bothered to check with me first. They didn't call me up and ask me if the ADL's allegations were true or if I had any comment on them. They just ran sensational stories with headlines like, National Alliance Linked to Bombings and Murders. And of course, they said nothing about the ADL's criminal activities or its links to the government of Israel. And many of these newspapers aren't even owned or edited by Jews, but they all follow the party line. They know that the ADL is an official Jewish organization, and therefore it cannot be criticized, and nothing it says can be questioned. That would be like questioning the Holocaust, heaven forbid. That's a little frightening, don't you think? So here's one of those complications about the way the Jews wield their power. They don't have to own everything in order to have things go their way. A newspaper editor or a television station owner doesn't have to be Jewish in order to slavishly follow the Jewish party line. The Jews own enough of the media. They hold enough of the policy-making positions so that no one, or almost no one, wants to cross them. When an institution becomes corrupt, and that, unfortunately, is the case with our mass media, just as with our political system, the Jews can count on using their power to make things go their way. They thrive on corruption. The ADL thrives on corruption. The ADL could not exist in an uncorrupted society. Finally, here's one other little complication in understanding the role of the Jews. I know, and you know, individual Jews who are not involved in any political or media activity. Individual Jews who simply earn a living and go about their business and don't pay much attention to what the ADL is doing. And so I often have people write to me and ask me why I am so hard on the Jews. They remind me that there are lots of evil people in our society, even in the media, who are not Jews. They remind me that Rupert Murdoch and Ted Turner aren't Jews, that Stalin wasn't a Jew, and that Lenin was only part Jewish. And that's true enough. And that's why we won't be able to dispense with the gallows even when we have no more Jews. But the people who are focusing on the complications that many of the world's evildoers aren't Jews and that many Jews are not involved in sinister activities, these people are failing to see the forest because of the trees. When I speak about the role of the Jews in the world today or in the past, I do simplify the world. I do simplify the facts. Because my aim is for people to see the forest, to understand the forest, at least in rough outline, before they spend too much time studying the individual trees. And the forest I want people to see, the big picture I want them to understand, even though it is a simplified picture, is this. Without Jews, there would have been no Bolshevik revolution and subsequent selective murder of two generations of the best and brightest of the Russians. Without Jews as an organized community pushing multiculturalism and diversity and open borders and racial mixing in the United States, white Americans would not now be facing the prospect of becoming a minority in their own country in the near future. It is the Jewish presence as a whole and its effect on our society that we must understand first before we start trying to understand all of the complicating details. Thanks for being with me again today.